From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Happy to be part of a team that's number three on the Heavy 100 in Talkers Magazine. Andy McCarthy is standing by, number three ranked show in the country. Andy McCarthy is standing by, Rich Lowry, too, a National Review. We have a lot to discuss today, including the fast-moving events at Columbia, as well as two campaigns to cover, and the immunity cases queuing up on Thursday at the Supreme Court. That will really have a lot to do with the two other trials the president could be facing, one on January 6th and the other on the documents case. So we'll keep an eye on that. But before we get to Andy McCarthy to break down what happened yesterday at the New York trial, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
TikTok, for us, represents a national security concern. And the reason I say that is that TikTok's parent company is beholden to the Chinese government.
Foreign aid package passes and includes a divest or ban for TikTok. A great move for our country. But now, how likely is it to be in effect through this next election? Will they actually be able to kick it out of the country? We'll explain the tools TikTok still has.
Number two.
Judge Marchand is calm. He's methodical. He makes decisions quickly. He's decisive.
He said this case is all Biden. There is zero, precisely zero evidence that President Biden had anything to do with bringing, orchestrating, running this case.
Too bad that's not true. Trump trial on pause until Thursday. What has been established so far? Many questions remain in Alvin Bragg's game plan. And even what he is charging is still up for discussion. We'll do just that.
Number one.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Disclose, divest.
We will not stop. We will not rest.
Campus chaos. Our next generation seems united in turning on our chief ally, Israel, in the Middle East. They're demanding divestment. You just heard that. They harass any Jew they see, from Minnesota to Massachusetts to California and even Texas. Widespread sit-ins, demonstrations, walkouts, and more. And we'll talk to Andy McCarthy about that, too, because he's been way ahead of the curve on this, wrote a book about it. No one was paying attention. And people are now looking up and saying, what's going on? What has happened to our colleges, many of which are elite? Andy, welcome back.
Brian, great to be with you. I used to be a proud alumnus of Columbia University, but that doesn't seem like the feeling today.
Are you personally, are you ticked off?
Well, I'm ticked off for a variety of reasons, but not least the one that you just alluded to. You know, I got involved in the anti-jihad early on, you know, 8 years before the 9/11 attacks, and I got interested in it enough that even after it was over, I wrote a couple of books about it. One was just a memoir of what it was like to be like a government prosecutor when we should have been regarding what we were up against as a war rather than, you know, a crime wave. But I was very interested in
that.
And
that was before 9/11. It was the blind shake, right?
Yes, 1993 World Trade Center bombing, and then a plot to try to blow up New York landmarks. But I was interested enough in the ideology, and especially the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the most effective Islamic ideological organization in the world, at the time funded by, you know, hundreds and millions, ultimately billions of dollars of Saudi money. The Brotherhood and the Saudis kind of broke up during the aftermath of the Arab Spring. But for a long time, it was Brotherhood ideology and Saudi money. And we saw it propagating that ideology across the United States. But my big complaint was we had all these Islamist organizations setting up shop in the United States that had their tentacles out of the Brotherhood and that had big financial backing in the Persian Gulf. And the biggest coup for the Muslim Brotherhood, I tried to explain, and I laid out the history in my book. It was called The Grand Jihad, which that title, by the way, is taken from an internal Muslim Brotherhood memorandum that talks about destroying the United States from within. That's what they regarded as the Grand Jihad. And their biggest coup was to establish chapters of what's known as the Muslim Students Association. They started with a couple in the Midwest. They were really started by Saeed Qutb, who was the most important theorist of the Muslim Brotherhood in the 1960s. It was such a success that they now have chapters, sometimes more than three in a single university, but they have chapters in virtually every college and university across the United States and Canada, and they've grown uninterrupted basically for 60 years. And what I tried to argue in my book was that there was an alliance between these Islamists, which I think more accurately are known as Sharia supremacists, and leftists to undermine the country, and that the backbone of this whole thing was on college campuses. And you ask me if I get ticked. What annoys me is that, you know, I don't expect everybody in the world to read my book, but like, it was obvious enough to a number of us who had been close to this that this was already a crisis in 2010 when that book came out. And I'm baffled to see a lot of people sort of wake up and see what's going on at Columbia and say, gee, how did that happen?
But well, I know that one of the things he did after 9/11 is start dismantling, I think, that Holy Family, the Hezbollah networks here, links to Hamas. They started following forensically where the money was flowing from. They did a great job at unwinding the Wahhabi schools in Saudi Arabia, and even Saudi Arabia's philosophy now, unless I'm totally naive, has changed as they try to modernize. So we did do a great job at just flat out killing them over in the Middle East, right?
Yeah, here's the thing, though, Brian. You're quite right about all that. But the Holy Land Foundation was a piggy bank for Hamas that was aggressively prosecuted by the Bush 43 yes. Justice Department. And a number of the Islamist organizations, including the Islamic Society of North America, which is kind of the graduate program for the Muslim Students Associations, but CARE and a number of the more infamous ones, they were regarded and proved up during that trial of the Holy Land Foundation to be unindicted co-conspirators in that case. But when we went from the Bush 43 administration to the Obama administration, they completely changed their enforcement philosophy, and instead of prosecuting those people, tried to bring them into the tent. And a lot of those people became very influential in the Democratic Party and in the Obama administration. And all these years later, they're just more influential. But we stopped pursuing those cases when Obama came in.
Wow. I do want to talk about the other case. For people at home to understand the mindset that Andy's describing, here's Malik Hassan of Columbia complaining about the consequences of protesting. She's from the Muslim Society of Brooklyn. Cut two.
We condemn colleges and universities such as Columbia, Yale, NYU, University of Minnesota, and more who call on law enforcement and riot police to carry out arrests against peaceful protesters. We are against the suspension and disproportionate disciplinary actions against students and the stripping away of the rights of students, including access to housing, belongings, food, and campus and service. We're here to say no more.
Right. He could scream all he wants, but what about the harassment of Jews to the point where they're recommended by the school, don't go on campus, we can't keep you safe?
Yeah, well, you know, I think it was Neil Ferguson wrote a great piece, I want to say in the last 2 months, the great historian Neil Ferguson, about the treachery of the intellectual class. And pointing out that this is exactly the sort of thing, nobody wants to hear this, but this is the kind of thing that happened in Germany in the 1930s.
Right.
The most sophisticated, educated society in Europe. Began happening on the campuses.
Why do you think Obama didn't pursue the stop prosecuting them?
Because he had a different philosophy of it. He thought that he philosophically believed not that they had an ideology that was anti-constitutional and anti-American, but that we had done things policy-wise to provoke them, and that the reason that they were hostile to us was because of those supposed provocations, and that if we just showed them that we respected them and we had an open-armed approach to them, that they would come around, because he wouldn't accept the fact that ideologically they are anti-Western, and not everything that happens in the world happens because of America. You know, people on the left think that every bad thing that happens because America did something that made people hate us.
That's what he thinks, because he apologized to everybody in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood in attendance. Remember?
Yes. But the point is, and he never wanted to hear this, right? But the point is, this is an ideology that believes that Allah prescribed Sharia law as the ideal form of human life, and that given that it was divinely ordained, anybody who does not adopt it once they've been invited to it is a hostile, is an enemy. That's their belief system.
Right.
It can't coexist with a free republic. It can't coexist.
But Andy, here's the thing. If you tell me I have to go, I want to go, if I say I want to go to Martinique and I want to go to and I want to go to the Bahamas every single day, why can't I have a good time? That's the college mindset. Now you're telling me what's attractive to the college kids are a society and a belief that women are second class, can't have jobs, that men will dominate, that this society in which existed in Gaza prior to the conflict was the one that's superior to the democracy on the other side, who was the chief ally of the country you were born in. How the hell can you sell me this horrible lifestyle?
Because they're making it up as they don't. They haven't internalized the truth of all that, Brian. So look, if you look at the Columbia protest, you see people with signs that say queers for Palestine or queers for Gaza. They better be queers for Gaza in Colombia, because if they go to Gaza, they're not going to last very long.
Of course,
as queers for Gaza.
Right? They do your research, Andy. I want to talk about the other case. It's okay if you can't, but can you hold on to the next segment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely. Sure.
Great. I want to talk about the Trump case in a moment. It's on pause today, but so much happened yesterday. We need an expert to unwind it. Not so much what took place, but what it means for the case. Huge difference. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And by the way, this trial is all Biden. You know, this is all Biden, just in case anybody has any question. And they're keeping me in a courtroom. It's freezing, by the way. In a courtroom all day long. Well, he's out campaigning. That's probably an advantage, because he can't campaign. Nobody knows what he's doing. You can't put two sentences together.
So that was Trump in between sessions when he gets a small break, talks to the press. That is to his advantage. And he did use yesterday to talk about Pennsylvania and the need to vote and support Dave McCormick. But Trump is not wrong if he wants to draw that conclusion, because Matt Colangelo, right from the Justice Department, and you know that he had the number three spot. People tell me that's a coveted spot, a launching pad for your career. And he takes what anyone else would consider a major donation, demotion, and goes and try and is a lead prosecutor in the case against President Trump. He also has some time with Letitia James. Andy McCarthy is still with us covering this trial from A to Z. First off, the president's absolutely frustrated, and he's allowed in the gag order to say what he said, though, right?
Yes, he's allowed to speak to that. He can speak about the judge. He can speak about Bragg. He can't speak about the witnesses. On the point about the Biden connection, Brian, can I just say, I think there's something that's unseen that we haven't paid enough attention to, which needs to have more highlighting. Okay. You know, it's easy enough with Jack Smith to see the Biden connection, because he's the special counsel for the Biden Justice Department and he exercises Biden's power. The collusion here is a little bit more unseen. But I can tell you the Justice Department and the Federal Election Commission take the position that those two federal agencies have exclusive authority in the United States to enforce federal campaign finance law. And if any other district attorney in the United States were trying to bring a campaign finance case based on federal law, his own version of federal law, not their version, the Justice Department would go crazy and they would be in court insisting that it stop and that the district attorney didn't have authority to do that. They're not making a peep here,
okay,
because Bragg is going after Trump.
So,
but in an ordinary case, that wouldn't happen.
So let's talk about what David Pecker said yesterday. What they've tried to establish is that Donald Trump was in cahoots with Michael Cohen in order to squelch bad stories and help him win an election. That ain't was any progress made?
Well, there's progress made in the sense that there's immense proof that that's true. The problem that Bragg has is that it's not a crime. There's no such crime. To have a conspiracy, you have to have an objective that is a penal crime. And collaborating to squelch politically embarrassing or politically damaging information simply isn't a crime.
Right. And for example, they say, well, he took stories. They wrote stories about Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz that helped the president win a primary. Well, by the way, we know every campaign is calling up reporters in order to write their opposition research in columns every single day. And how many people get up in the morning and look, I want to find out the facts. Let me pick up the Inquirer about Marco Rubio.
Yeah, well, you know, the fact that Trump is doing it with the Inquirer when Democrats have been doing it for decades with the New York Times, I'm supposed to get whipped up about the Inquirer? I mean,
Where is, and that's just the main thing, Andy, which people like you always tell me. Don't get caught up in what's wrong. It's wrong to have an affair outside your marriage. It's wrong to go with a hooker if he, in fact, did that. It's also wrong to get a woman pregnant and then pay off a doorman. The doorman story didn't happen. It was a total ruse. They did write a check for it anyway. Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels, it doesn't matter what happened. It's all how it relates to the campaign, correct?
Yes. And there's an awful lot of stuff in the world that's icky but not illegal. And what Bragg is trying to do here is prove a lot of stuff that's icky in the hope that it turns the jury, you know, the jury finds it appalling and they'll convict him of anything. But the fact is, what he's showing isn't a crime. And rationally, it doesn't make sense to say, as Bragg contends, that Trump stole an election in 2016 when the crimes charged in the indictment happened in 2017. You can't steal something in 2016 by actions taken the next year. It doesn't make any logical sense.
Because after he won, he wrote the checks to Cohen, reportedly, to Cohen to handle this or reimburse Cohen for what he did. If Cohen acted on his own or he acted on the behest or he was just told to fix this, that's it. So everyone gets caught up in the salacious part of it. But the jury has to keep their eye on the ball. And that's the defense's job. 20 seconds. Your thought?
Exactly right. They have to just show there's no crime.
Right. No crime. You might not like it, but no crime or there is a crime. That's where the defense should be. Hopefully, they're up for the challenge. Thanks, Andy.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What I learned during the Black Lives Matter protests, when I was notified that under the previous administration that there were those anarchists that came into the city with the determination of really disrupting and tearing our city apart. And you looked at some of the people, they were from outside our city. We strongly believe that is the case right now. That there are people who are here, they latch on to any protest.
Man, I give Mayor Adams credit right there. There's no doubt about it. They're doing that. For him to say that is great. For him to admit that about Black Lives Matter would have been great. He wasn't mayor then. I think he was borough president. But it would have been great to have an African-American come out and say, these guys wrecking the place, not our guys. Not for racial justice. They're here because they hate America. There's people on those campuses in their late 20s and 30s. They're not students. They have student IDs. And they are negotiating at Columbia with these squatters who have taken over the center square of that institution. And they were told to get up, pick up the stakes, and get out by midnight. They didn't. But now the president said, we're making so much progress overnight, we're going to let the talks go on for 48 more hours. Can you say week? Rich Lowry joins us now, editor of National Review. Rich, what kind of progress could you be making? You know what these squatters want? They want to divest you from Israel. I guess they want all Jews off campus. What kind of progress do you think they're making?
Yeah, it makes no sense to have cleared them out last Thursday, which was the right thing to do, and just let them come right back in and not clear them right back out. So she's negotiating, she's delaying, she's caught really in a terrible situation of partly of her own making. But you know, the faculty will oppose her and do anything to depose her if she moves against these protesters. And everyone else is like, what's taking you so long? So this is the chickens coming home to roost. Couldn't happen to a nicer person. But the policies against harassment should be neutrally and applied objectively, you know, no matter who's saying it or who's violating it. And rules against trespassing should be neutrally applied. So there shouldn't be a permission slip if you hate Israel that you get to violate all these rules.
But it's not a handful, Rich. I mean, look at the University of Minnesota, look at MIT, look at Tufts College, look at Rice, look at Berkeley. You know, these are just off the top of my head. NYU especially seems got violent. They arrested about 100 people. This is faculty. These are dozens. And suddenly we got a lot of Palestinian garb. I don't know if Yasser Arafat had a clothing line, but it's doing quite well now if you put it on Amazon.
Yeah, and someone clearly went to some outdoor store and bought a bunch of green tents, which are magically appeared on every campus in America. So the groups, the national groups that organize these kind of protests, they're eliminationist. You know, they hate Israel, they want to eliminate it, and they are quite explicit. They support any means necessary, you know, which is an endorsement of violence. So it's a bad scene. It's going to spread more. But what you need to do is show that it doesn't work. And you know, if you'd cleared them out on Thursday and then they came back on Friday, cleared them out again, maybe this wouldn't have spread so far.
Right. But the thing is, someone's financing it. Someone's printing up those signs, making those tents. These are hundreds of groups across the country and hundreds of institutions across the country. I don't think they can really comprehensively talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict that's existed for 70 years and maybe hundreds of years. But listen to what they're saying on the campuses. Here's one. Cut four. This is Nardine Kaswani. She's vilifying the NYPD because we all know they're the problem. Cut four.
The NYPD are doing the work of the Zionist entity on the ground from our campuses to our communities to the streets from police attacking protesters to administration unleashing those same cops on their students and taking away their housing, access to dining halls, and other important necessities to life as well.
I totally believe it. Which is so convincing, so motivational. I think she signed up for Anthony Robbins' motivational group. So, right, of course, blame the NYPD. You know what they're chanting to mostly black officers? NYPD, KKK. These are Ivy Leaguers, in theory.
Yeah. You know, there was a video from Vanderbilt a couple of weeks ago before this latest battle. Protests began to spread where a black cop showed up and they're berating him, you know, as being the man, basically, and favoring genocide and favoring his own children eventually being killed in the genocide. It's just insane. It's childish. There should be adults, you know, in the room, and there's not many left. The fact is, after 1968, when there were a lot of protests, including most famously at Columbia, those radicals basically took over academia. And that's why you have these students and the outside agitators are, in a crude form, repeating back what they hear in their classrooms about the evils of the West, the evils of supposed U.S. imperialism, and this kind of woke ideology that if you're white or quote-unquote white, because a lot of people in Israel aren't white, you're inherently evil, and if you're brown, you're inherently good. And so, that's just a reductive and evil way to look at the world.
Do you know what's so interesting, Rich, is – I was talking to Rich Lowry, National Review – is that we're not talking about, well, the Republicans believe this and the Democrats believe this. Republicans aren't even in this. I mean, they're calling for the president to resign, and they're calling for the funding to be denied. But this is about the Democrats aren't left enough for them. Yep. You understand? So I feel like saying I'm watching a fight go on. I go, can I take the winner? Do they know without how much harder their life will be if a Republican wins?
Yeah, well, this is another potential analogy with 1968. The disorder in the streets, which was also a fight within the left or the left of center politics or for the soul of the Democratic Party, destroyed the Democratic Party and made it possible for Richard Nixon to win. So these protests, they're helping Donald Trump. They're hurting Joe Biden. White House had initially a good statement about Colombia, and then Biden did yesterday his many fine people on both sides type statement where he doesn't like the protests. But he doesn't like anyone who doesn't know what the truth of what's happening in Gaza either, which just shows he wants these people to show up and vote for him, right? They're young progressives. He's shed their support. He needs it. But on the other hand, if he's with them or totally goes on their side, he alienates the vast majority of the country. So he's really stuck the same way the president of Colombia is.
So the Trump trial so far, do you think it's hurting the president?
I think it is in the sense that they have him confined in a room, sitting at a defense table, glowering there, and it's humiliating. It's wasting his time. I don't think it's going to be decisive in November, but it doesn't help. Ask him, would you rather be there or would you rather be doing a rally? Ask his campaign, would they rather have him there or rather have him doing a rally? Clearly, they'd rather have him doing a rally or anything else. So at the margins, it's hurting him. Mm-hmm. They hope a conviction will tank him. I don't think that's true, but you'd rather not be convicted. So, and this is the reason they're doing it. If they thought this somehow helped them, if they sincerely believe this would help them win in November, they'd stop. They wouldn't. This case would go away. All the other cases would go away. But they're draining resources and time, if nothing else.
They are. Just keep in mind, it is April, and it's very early, and you're not going against true. Obama and Clinton. You're going against a guy that hurts himself every time he speaks. I mean, yesterday he had a bunch of missteps. Then he made up some story again that he drove an 18-wheeler. He never did that. PolitiFact already called him out on it. This is 1 week after he claimed his uncle was eaten by cannibals in World War II. So this is the problem for Biden is that he can't speak. He doesn't do motivate. He doesn't motivate. Doesn't inspire people. So their best hope is to make Donald Trump a worse alternative and make him go through some of these controversial things that happened in his past. And that's the only thing. The only thing I say is we forget April so quick. I mean, we forget March.
Yep.
So we have short-term memory. That's totally. One big advantage. So, Rich, I want to move on and talk about that $95 billion weapons package that comes foreign aid package that is going to be signed by the president today. What are you for in it? What aren't you?
I support it. I think the aid to Ukraine is really important. It's only about, I think, $8 billion roughly that's weapons. A lot of that money is going to just paying for operations for U.S. troops that have been sent to other European countries. So I would have probably stripped it down a little bit more since the Ukraine part is the most controversial, stripped it down to its core. There's funding for NGOs in there that's been a focus of some folks on the right. I wouldn't do that. But overall, it replenishes our military. It helps our allies. And I think it'd be just very bad to let Russia win in Ukraine unnecessarily. This should help Ukraine just hold the line. They're not going to sweep to victory. They're obviously not going to conquer Moscow. But if they hold the line, maybe eventually you get a decent peace deal.
Another part of this is the eventual banning of TikTok if they don't divest. Mm-hmm. I wish it was quicker. I wish it was in the next 3 months. But they said they needed more time. That's what the Senate wanted. We'll digest. We'll sign off on your TikTok ban, House, that you gave us with 300 votes. But we're going to need more time in order for them to find a buyer or not find a buyer to divest. So I thought this was interesting. I believe that it's as evil as it gets. It's as, to a degree, it's like fentanyl. They're trying to kill our people 200 a day with fentanyl that they manufacture and incentivize the people sell. And they're also trying to manipulate our and play us on our divisions, whether it's race. In this case, it's pro-Palestinian. Do you think it's playing a role?
In these protests?
Yes.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure how deliberate it is. I just think social media is generally malign and tends to spread the worst trends in our society. And TikTok is a particular offender. You know, it is telling that you don't have TikTok, this version of TikTok, available in China, right? The same way that everyone who creates social media in Silicon Valley make sure their kids aren't on it because they know the potential harms. And I would be even more, I support this TikTok bill. I'd be more prescriptive in a more wide-ranging way. I'd have some serious age limit on when kids can use social media because we've conducted this vast psychological experiment on our teenagers, and it hasn't worked out well, particularly with teenage girls.
You're Scott Galloway, NYU professor, Cut 25.
What might sound paranoid doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, through their frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convinced they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social media is sowing division and polarization.
No question. And now listen to Christopher Wray, Cut 24.
TikTok, for us, represents a national security concern. And the reason I say that is that TikTok's parent company is beholden to the Chinese government. So that, for us, manifests itself in three specific ways. It has to do with the data. It has to do with the recommendation algorithm. It has to deal with the software. The data, we're talking about the ability to control or collect data on millions and millions of users and to use it for all sorts of influence operations like driving their AI efforts, which are not remotely constrained by the rule of law.
I mean, people have problems with Christopher Wray, that's fine, but please tell me where the political agenda is there.
Yeah, and it's an analogy. This is kind of a rough analogy, Brian, but it'd be a little bit like a Soviet company coming in the 1980s and saying, you know what, we're going to buy CBS, right? And everyone said, no, you're not. You're not going to do that. That just gives you too much influence over our information environment. And it's sort of analogous here. Why would we have this tool? Ultimately, you know, they try to deny it, of the CCP being so influential in what the discussion here is in the United States. And we all, you know, if you're on Twitter or other social media, you're often reacting to or seeing videos on TikTok, even if you're not on TikTok yourself, because it's so important.
I just think we got to wise up, and we just got to, you know, you got to put your arm, you know, put your hands up if you're in a fight. At one point, we have to realize from every angle, China is fighting us, and it's not necessarily harassing our planes over Taiwan, you know, in the South China Sea. It is here. And even though we don't have these evil intentions, we're just looking to protect our allies and free trade, we have to come to grips with the fact that they do. Do you think that you have, as a leader, we should make that clear to the American people?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I do think, you know, we're clearer on that than we were. And this is one area where Trump forged a transformation that Biden has kind of walked back a little bit, but has basically accepted the Trump approach to China, which was totally different than what had been the bipartisan consensus that we're going to get along with them and eventually they're going to grow their way into being a liberal society. And I supported the trade agreements with China, the ascension to the WTO, but it failed. It didn't work. And Trump was the, if not the first, certainly the loudest voice saying this was a failure and we have to do something different. And I think that's exactly right.
All right. We'll watch these demonstrations in Columbia and NYU. I'm sure you'll be writing about it, as well as a smaller school in New York called the New School, Minnesota, MIT, Emerson College. They're popping up everywhere. We'll see where it goes and who's behind it. Rich Lowry, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Brian.
All right. Listen, I'm going to come back. If you have some things to say, ring us up, 1-866-408-7669. If you're at work and can't call, just go to BrianKilmeade.com, click on comments.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'll tell you what. And by the way, is that right?
The reason I have a pension is because of you.
Well, we did get that done. Anyway, besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler.
Okay, there was a good moment. He had somebody say, the only reason I have a pay, I'm a Teamster. The only reason I have a pension is because of you. Instead of absorbing that moment, well, thank you very much. This is what we were able to do. He said, okay, yeah, we got that done. Good little self-effacing. And then he says, well, I used to drive an 18-wheeler. What? It's not true. PolitiFact has proven over and over again it's not true. He said it three separate times. He also said he grew up in a Puerto Rican church. The next week he said he grew up in a black church. I didn't know they had such a prominent place in Delaware, but I'm always learning. That didn't happen. We know about his uncle being shot out in World War II out of the sky and eaten by cannibals. That didn't happen, as far as I know. And then, of course, on the stump, I think one of President Trump's best assets is Joe Biden. Because even in a written speech, he rushes through it. He can't read or speak well anymore. Here he is in Tampa. He only speaks for 15 minutes, takes no questions. Listen to this.
In a sense, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted?
Right. How'd that go? How many times does Donald Trump have to prove you can't be trusted? I think every day he says it, and now you're showing everyone you don't believe it. So the president of the United States, let me see. Once he graduated from Syracuse with honors. Oh, I'm sorry. I got that wrong. He graduated. He got a full scholarship, too, by the way. It turns out he didn't graduate with honors. He finished 74 out of 83 people in his law school class. That's a little different. Remember he said that his son died in Iraq in war? Didn't happen. He tries to be relatable to people who lose their child at war. Sadly, his son died of brain cancer, not at war, in Iraq. But everyone just gives him a pass. And let alone everything with all of his business. I know nothing about my son's overseas business dealings. And Donald Trump's the problem. You got to keep a fact checker on hand when Donald Trump speaks. I'm pretty sure CNN, you have it in the budget to get one from Joe Biden speaks. But then you got to give the guy airtime. That might be the issue.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade Show. Charlie Hurd has made his way up from filling in on Fox and Friends. He's going to be here, too. He's going to bring his A-game. Fox News contributor, columnist for The Washington Times. And Garrett Ventry will be here, too, founder of and president of GRB Strategies. Cut his teeth with Senator Chuck Grassley as his key advisor. Now he's working with four or five other Republican candidates. I love his analysis as well. So we'll get to that, all that, in a moment. We're also following developing scenes uptown at Columbia and downtown at NYU. The president of the United States, we think, went golfing today because he's got off. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
TikTok, for us, represents a national security concern. And the reason I say that is that TikTok's parent company is beholden to the Chinese government.
That is Christopher Wray. And I couldn't be more against TikTok, but I don't want to get off track. The foreign aid package passes and includes a divest ban for TikTok. A great move for our country, but how likely is it to actually go into effect? We'll explain the tools TikTok still has.
Number two.
Judge Marchand is calm. He's methodical. He makes decisions quickly. He's decisive.
He said this case is all Biden. There is precisely zero evidence that President Biden had anything to do with bringing, orchestrating, running this case.
Which is wrong. Trump trial on pause until Thursday. What has been established so far? Many questions remain about Alvin Bragg's game plan and even what he is charging. Let's discuss it.
Number one.
Free Palestine.
Free Palestine.
Disclose. Divest.
We will not stop. We will not rest.
Unbelievable. What idiots. Campus chaos. Our next generation seems united in turning on our chief ally, Israel. They are demanding divestiture, as you just heard. Harass any Jew they see, from Minnesota to Massachusetts to California and even Texas. Widespread sit-ins, demonstrations, walkouts, and more. And one of the epicenters is Columbia University, a legendary university to put out all these Nobel Prize winners, huge endowment, world-renowned. Lou Gehrig went there, for goodness sakes, of all things, and he turned out to be a pretty good first baseman, according to reports, although I'm forced to watch only black and white film. Charlie, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
So I just want to talk about Lou Gehrig for an hour.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be, you know, a lot of times that would be more interesting than listening to protesters and their firm grip on history and world affairs.
Where'd this come from? I mean, since when do they care? I mean, if I told you a year ago there'll be Palestinians, pro-Palestinian students asking for a two-state solution, you'd go, Brian, nobody cares.
Right.
Well, the Abraham Accords, even in the Middle East, they weren't talking about this.
Yeah, it's insane. I always hate doing this because it's kind of lazy to say, well, what if they were talking about, you know, what if they were, you know, like when we talk about the Trump trial stuff, you know, what if they were doing this to a Democrat? What if, you know, I do think it is important to note if you were hearing chants like this about any group of people other than Jews on a college campus, you would never work again. If you were talking like this, showing overt hostility towards, you know, I don't know, New Guineans or people from a different place, you would never have it. You would be thrown off campus. You would, if you were a professor, you'd never hold another job. But for whatever reason, it's perfectly acceptable, and the universities don't have any interest in enforcing actual codes of conduct.
Just to back up what Columbia is doing, they gave the protest till midnight to get out. You know, understand, you're upset, fine. We got finals, you need you to pick up. They didn't. So when I first got up this morning, there was no progress. All of a sudden, we get an email and a letter saying, we have made progress about 3:30 in the morning. We have made progress. Therefore, we're going to give the protesters 48 more hours to come to an agreement. And Charlie, I ask you, what agreement? Get up and go to school. Agree? Are you going to divest?
Yeah.
Are you going to stop investing in Israel? Are you going to stop letting Israel invest in you? Is that what you want? Do you want Jews off campus? What are we getting close to agreeing to?
Yeah, it's such a great point, because the minute you pretend like you're negotiating with them, or even worse, you are negotiating with them, you legitimize them. And, you know, and it really is true. You know, just by giving them a platform and pretending that they are serious and pretending that they might actually have some important points to make. Now, I get it. Obviously, everybody, you know, I do think there are probably some well-meaning kids that got wrapped up in this because they care about Palestinian
children. I have no patience for it.
Yeah, no, I get it. But I'm just trying to figure out how they get to this point. And, and of course, everybody cares about Palestinian children. Everybody cares about – and if you actually care about Palestinian children, you want to eliminate Hamas. Because the gravest threat to a Palestinian child has always been Hamas. Hamas steals food from Palestinian children.
We know. We see the video. But evidently, 80% of the people in Gaza support Hamas. And we're not going to know if that is true or if that's hostage talk unless we wipe out Hamas. But this administration told Netanyahu, you will not go into Rafah. I mean, he's going to go in anyway. But that's the type of tension between your greatest ally and the next generation hating Israel, and this president half in on everything he does. But President Trump was not half in yesterday. I hope he goes up and sees those students in Columbia. But here's cut five.
What's going on with the colleges? And where they're closing Columbia now? I mean, it's just crazy. Columbia should gain a little strength, a little courage, and keep their school open. It's crazy, because that means the other side wins. And the people running Columbia have made a grave mistake.
See, that's what somebody says if he's direct and sure of himself. But President Biden makes a passing remark while walking in the woods on Earth Day that we're against anti-Semitism. I set up a program for that, as opposed to what the hell are you doing?
I don't even know what that means.
Right. I guess he might be against anti-Semitism.
Yeah, but what was the program? I'm still trying to figure that one out. You know, Trump had a tremendous, you know, no politician in our lifetime has done more to break down all of the sort of political barriers than Donald Trump. And we see that in with all of the inroads he's made into winning over black voters, Hispanic voters, in ways that no Republican has ever been able to make inroads like that. Trump could do that now, and he should do that. And we've seen some of it where he went to the bodega in New York. Donald Trump should spend every single day that he's forced to be here for this sham clown trial in New York City. He should take an afternoon, take a lunch break, and go to these places and go and highlight the insanity that is all that should all be laid at the feet of Joe Biden and Democrats who have controlled this place forever. And, you know, the New York Times poll shows him cutting his Biden's lead in half from over 20 points down to 10 points
in New York,
in New York State. You know, but when you walk around and there's so much disorder, you can't ride on the subway. There's filth everywhere. All the stuff that Donald Trump is so good at talking about, I'm not saying he's going to win New York or win New York City, but talking about those issues puts Democrats on the defense and puts Joe Biden.
I would just love to see him do more of the bodega stuff, and hopefully he gets his footing. You've got 5 weeks of this because at Columbia, there's a story in front of the Danny Penny subway. I think there's a story in front of every supermarket. There's a story. They're talking about doing a rally in the Bronx and one MSG. Billy Joel is now not playing there every month, so it does open up some space, and I imagine it'll be just as crowded. But I got to give Mayor Adams credit because he said something I didn't think he would say that we all talked about, but no one else did, about the Black Lives Matter protests. I want you to hear what he said. Cut eight.
What I learned during the Black Lives Matter protests, when I was notified that under the previous administration that there were those anarchists that came into the city with the determination of really disrupting and tearing our city apart. And you looked at some of the people, they were from outside our city. We strongly believe that is the case right now. That there are people who are here, they latch on to any protest.
I believe fundamentally these mostly students, but I believe they're being totally organized by outsiders who come in and are getting paid.
Yeah. First of all, where has that Eric Adams been since the election? He got elected talking like that and promising to bring order, and he's kind of gone mute ever since. But so it's welcome back. That's great. But I also thought it was interesting notice when he got heckled, he was in Miami on an airplane flying back to New York. And that's where he gets heckled, which underscores the point you were just making. I think that, you know, these aren't Columbia students. I mean, I'm sure they are Columbia students, but there are a lot of people from Miami who are getting on a plane to fly up to New York for, you know, are they a Columbia student? I don't know. But it does sort of underscore that this sort of thing attracts bad actors from everywhere who just want to disrupt stuff. And we fall for it. And universities fall for it when they have total authority to just shut it all down if they wanted to.
Yeah, it's just a scary thing for our future. When we come back, Charlie, I want to talk about TikTok, how you feel about the ban that could be in place if the Chinese don't divest, and I'm sure they won't. They say that Grindr, I know it's a kind of great example, is an example of, we just said, people are able to infiltrate on Grindr, use some of these videos to extort people, and they said that they made Grindr sell, and they sold.
What's Grindr?
Pete, do you know? I think it's a homosexual X-rated site.
What Grindr is than I would.
Yeah.
So I'm not on Grindr, but.
Well, you don't have a handle there.
No.
I was searching for you. I got nothing.
I'm not the only thing I know about Grindr is that I'm not on Grindr.
Well, just know, sadly, it's the only example I have. It's the one I got to use. All right. Until we get this TikTok example.
It's always the simple questions that are the most devastating.
To who? Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
We ought to make sure that TikTok is sold. There's no reason why, again, a communist regime should have the access to the information, keystroke information. They're spying on people's location. They can hear what you're saying. They know what you're doing on other apps. This is China. And so this makes all the sense in the world. We need to move forward on that legislation. But again, I think the Democrats are blocking this. It's a terrible situation, Laura, because TikTok, it's like having literally 100 million censors. We would never allow any enemy of this country to have that kind of information on 100 million devices in this country. And that's exactly what TikTok is.
And that was Senator Eric Schmidt of Missouri. Charlie Hurt still here. Charlie, the thing that bothers me, and it might not bother you. I mean, Rand Paul is somebody who just loves TikTok, evidently. But here's what they're saying. It's going to be an extra 3 or 4 months before China has to divest. That's past this election. And that's what bothers me, because China does not want Trump to win, number one. Number two, that's another 10, 11 months where they're collecting data on our next generation of Americans, 170 million users. On average, they spend 60 minutes a day.
Yeah. Well, no, I share the concerns about the idea of, like, trying to go after these apps just because on free speech grounds, because it's not a particularly effective way of going after these people. Because if China is spying on us, why don't we should go after China? That's the problem. If China is actually doing these things, and I believe they are, then we should confront China and hold China accountable for it.
They say that, I mean, China doesn't care. They go, listen, it's ByteDance. It's a private company. So if you want, Biden says, well, do me a favor, pull it out.
Okay.
Sell it. We don't believe you.
Okay.
China's not an issue.
But they can say whatever they want to say. But if we know that China is spying on us through this app or the balloon or anything else, we should go out.
But you know what China just did? They just banned Threads. And they banned the WhatsApp.
I'm not defending TikTok. I've been ambivalent all along on the whole issue of whether we should ban it or not. But my main problem with banning it is I just don't know how they're going to find workarounds. There's going to be a way.
So we should just let them in the border too?
No, I didn't say that. I did not say that, because I honestly don't know. And I am pretty ambivalent about it. But if China is spying on us, we should go after China.
But I'm sure we don't do it, through the CIA.
In the same way, if we have evidence that China, all of China's culpability with the coronavirus, China owns buildings in New York City. We should go and seize their buildings and take them away from them. I'm actually even more like a fundamentalist on what we should do to China. We should confront them at every turn. And again, I'm not defending TikTok. But I do get the idea. And then to me, the biggest point of all is that if TikTok is doing a better job educating our students in this country than our universities are, then we need to get rid of our universities and start from scratch. That is a catastrophe. But I'm not defending the stupid.
Well, the thing is, it's an insidious algorithm. They're better than Instagram. People smarter than me, Devise, comes up with these apps. That's fine. So little by little, since 2014, TikTok has taken the lion's share of the marketplace, and they're manipulating their news feed to manipulate how we do it. So I wouldn't think I would think Ivy League kids would be the least susceptible because they have a sophistication about them. But instead, you're looking at maybe you get them at 15. By the time they're 19, they're looking around and go, yeah, don't you see this Palestinian situation? Don't you think race in America? Don't you think we're fundamentally racist?
What prevents Iran from doing the exact same thing?
They're gonna, and that's where we got to stop it.
And
that's why we got to China leads.
And again, I'm not saying that
ban
TikTok.
I want you to hear Scott Galloway.
We have to address these bigger problems.
I want you to hear what the NYU professor said, Scott Galloway, of all people in NYU, Cut 25.
What might sound paranoid doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, through the frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convinced they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social media is sowing division and polarization.
And there's no question it has.
Yeah, but the whole point of a free country is, and the whole reason that we value education in this country is because you cannot have a free country, you cannot have a free republic without an educated electorate. And you do not have an educated electorate if they fall for this crap.
So how about this? You go to school, you have a great school system, and then at night you have people recruiting you to a radical group, whether it's the Crips or the Black Panthers or a KKK group. So you go, okay, I'm going to just stay off that block. Then you find out they're on every block. And then you have people who just go, who are open to different ideas. You know, I don't like this pro-American. We're too pro-American. Next thing you know, this builds. So this happened over the course of 8-9 years.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I want free speech here. You don't like Facebook? Let's go at it. You don't like Instagram? Let's go at it. But we have to protect our country from outside infiltration, just like a missile defense system. That's why, see, that's why the Chinese can't buy CBS. That's why they'll never buy Fox, because media companies can't be owned by other entities. And it's time for us to understand those entities are now apps, no longer big antennas.
You know, I agree with you that something has to be done about it. My concern is, I don't know I wonder how effective it's going to be to just simply say, we're going to ban this app and then let the next one come along.
Well, no, then we got to stop it. That's the precedent. And if you let Iranian come out with El Cuds and you, forget it.
Well, you know where you...
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The University of Columbia has two presidents right now, and it's Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, because this is not about Israel. This is about America. And the university just decided that they don't care about Jewish safety. They don't care about the Jewish students. They are negotiating with suspended organizations that they want to burn everything down. And I'm despondent this morning.
That Shai Didavai, you've seen him, the professor, the Columbia professor, who was told your key card doesn't work because you're Jewish and we can't protect you. I'm talking about, this is 2024. I'm talking about America. I'm not talking about Egypt. I'm not talking about Gaza. I'm not talking about the West Bank. I'm talking about the west side of Manhattan. We can't protect you to go do your job. And that's why he hopped up on Fox. I've been texting back and forth with him. I was kind of hoping that he would do our show first, but we'll get him later. Sadly, this is not going away. With me right now is Garrett Ventry, the founder and president of GRV Strategies. One of his great jobs was former senior advisor, Senator Chuck Grassley, now working with a bunch of candidates. Garrett, I feel like I'm watching Democrats fight Democrats and a whole generation fight the Jewish community.
Yeah, Brian, it's good to be back with you. It is very interesting here because you do have this great divide. There are, you know, more moderate members of Congress on the Democrat side of the aisle who think what's happening in Columbia and across the country,
the travesty,
it's ridiculous and it should never be happening here, right? And then you have President Biden, who's really in, you know, and you and I were talking about this during the break here. He's kind of in a predicament here, right? You have a lot of, you know, liberal New York City, you know, Jewish donors, California donors, those type of folks who think this is absolutely ridiculous what's happening, right? And one of the more interesting thing was during that anti, you know, Semitism on college campuses hearing, Elise Stefanik, obviously a client of mine here, she was getting calls from Dems throughout the country being like, thank you for doing this. Right.
She's called for the president to step down.
Correct.
She's called for federal funding to stop to Columbia.
Right. She's getting texts from Democrats she went to Harvard with, Democrats who previously didn't like her because of her support for Donald Trump, being like, thank you for doing this. I can't believe my political party's not doing this. Right. She's getting that. So you have this predicament there. Then you have Joe Biden, who has to, you know, capitulate to the most fringe part of his base. And you saw this in Michigan. You've seen this in Minnesota, where he's pulling behind Donald Trump there, specifically because you have a community there that is pissed off anytime he tries to say anything in support of Israel. So he's in a real predicament here. And so you are seeing Democrats really fight it out over this issue. You're seeing call for a ceasefire, which is ridiculous. Think about that. You and I both know this. A ceasefire with a terrorist group who will continue to commit terrorism. You can't until they're eradicated.
But Garrett, you're a week behind. It used to be ceasefire.
Right.
Now it is divest from Israel.
Right.
And now it is bring in Palestine.
Right.
And now it is pro-Hamas.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing this on the streets. And literally, if you should know, and the polls all say it, maybe they're being held hostage. Don't know until Israel's allowed to wipe them out. But 80% of the people support the October 7th attack on Israel in Gaza.
Yep. No, it's ridiculous.
So when you compliment one, you have to compliment the other.
Right.
Why don't you hear, I want you to, this is what Trump said yesterday.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think. Cut six.
What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU, and others, is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess. We have very radical people wanting to rip the colleges down, the universities down. And that's a shame. But it all starts with Joe Biden. The signals he puts out are so bad. And I can tell you, he's no friend of Israel, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's right. I think that last line
like
is the truest.
Yeah. If
he
was
a great tone.
Use your client.
No, it's a great message. I mean, President Trump is right here. I mean, it is the last line is the most true. He's no friend of Israel, right? You're talking about, you know, you've seen Democrats within his party, even Schumer going to the floor and saying in the middle of a war, Netanyahu should step down and a new government should be formed.
Now they're talking about sanctioning
right.
a a division of the IDF.
No, it's absolutely insane. You're talking about these are the same people that wanted to give billions of dollars to Iran, free it up for hostage negotiations right before this attack happened. They essentially freed up all this money. We all know Iran's funding Hamas, Hezbollah, all these terrorist organizations through proxies to commit acts of terrorism against the United States allies, specifically in the region Israel. And so I think President Trump's tone here is right. This is a, again, wedge issue for Biden. Biden will piss off either, you know, the more moderate people in his party who think this is ridiculous, right, or the fringe of his party who he needs to vote for him in November.
And Garrett, I don't give the president a pass. They say that he's able to reach people on social media. He won't do any interviews, doesn't speak about anything. Right. Horrific attacks, mm-hmm. the 300 plus missiles that go into Israel, unprecedented. Hopefully never happens again, but likely to. There's major events happening. He never talks to anybody, American people, let alone his own party, let alone sit down with a tough interview.
Right.
And I've always found out that politicians, if they have the answers, they like the tougher questions because they want it to come out. It's more effective than a speech. So here is the spokesperson, KJP, on this issue. Cut seven.
We have put forward an anti-Semitism strategy that we have been implementing that obviously involves the different federal agencies to do everything that we can to make sure students feel safe. Obviously, Jewish students feel safe. Jewish Americans feel safe. And so we'll continue to do that work. But in the meantime, we have to be very clear. We have to condemn. We have to condemn violent rhetoric. We have to condemn any form of hate. And that's what the president has been consistent on throughout this administration.
Yeah, it's like mumbo jumbo for I released a blog post, right? They're not actually doing anything. The president could do a couple things immediately. He could cut off federal funding like Congresswoman Stefanik has called for. That's number one. Number two, he can even go further if he wanted to and seize endowments of these universities until they fired these presidents. He has power to do that. Number three, he could actually put out a statement calling for them to stop this and fire them. And number four, he could support sending in the National Guard to these campuses. It's absolutely ridiculous. You remember this during the George Floyd protests. Senator Cotton wrote that famous op-ed, send in the troops, and everybody freaked out about it, right? I think this is a smart thing to do here.
He's calling for it again.
Yeah, it's like we should be doing this. I don't know if Senator Cotton's called for it this time. I'd have to go back and check, but I think this applies here. You have these people committing violence. You have these people. It's disorder. It's dysfunction. Jewish students do not feel safe here. And you can use all this like rhetoric, like we want them to feel safe, but there's no action towards it. They're being told to leave campus.
What does an anti-Semitism program look like? How about the way you live your life every day?
Correct.
You don't need a program. We don't need funding. We don't need a foundation.
Right.
Plenty are built in. We've never seen anything like this.
Absolutely.
Yesterday, we had a Holocaust survivor who was 9 years old with tattoos on her arm come in and said, in my entire life, I never thought I would have bet everything I owned that this would never happen in America. All I'd have to see is that. If I'm the senator or governor. But guess what? Right in uptown New York, Senator Schumer had 100 people arrested outside his apartment who were protesting in New York City. This guy is invisible. So he shows no backbone. If there's an energy drink that's going to be bad for kids in the long run, he's going to have a press conference on it. But something about he's a Jewish man in New York where NYU, New School, and Columbia are having huge, massive protests, actually collecting global attention. And I just read this morning that Vanderbilt is also a site of some unrest overnight. So there's like three or four others throughout the country. We got Rice University, MIT, Emerson, upstate New York,
right.
Minnesota. In Oklahoma, it's interesting. They said Oklahoma State said if we say any of that, we're going in right away. We're cleaning it out. Harvard was smart enough to shut their gates to their town square. Never been on that campus, but they said it's going to be shut till Friday. But once you get in there, you just got to decide. If you're president, I got to clean this out. I have an obligation to the history and the current students of Columbia to let them finish out the most important weeks of their semester without being threatened.
That's right. And I mean, you know, part of this here is I think there's someone had put this out. Imagine you replace Jewish with any other race, any other religion.
Muslims.
Exactly. Muslims, African-Americans.
Muslims. Even after 9/11.
Correct. Imagine they're doing that. You would have outrage from Chuck Schumer and all of these people. It's very odd. The targeting of Jewish people is becoming acceptable in this country from the far left. And for Chuck Schumer, who lives in New York, the senator of New York, to not be doing anything here, providing any support, is absolutely ridiculous.
So, Garrett, I want to bring you to the stump where the president's very frustrated. He cannot leave the courtroom. Today he can. I think he's golfing. I'd love for him to go to Columbia or go to a grocery store and just talk about these prices. But the good thing for the President Trump, former President Trump, is that current President Biden is a terrible campaigner.
Yeah.
Case in point, yesterday, making up another story, which could have been a great moment about being a truck driver.
In a sense, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted? I tell you what. And by the way, is that right?
The only reason I have a pension is because of you.
Well, we did get that thing. Anyway, besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler.
Okay.
It's remarkable. It's like, yeah, the moment someone's like, you saved my pension, he's like, yeah, it's really not that important, but what's important is I used to drive an 18-wheeler, which he never did.
So again, isn't that a great moment?
It's incredible.
If for someone to yell out, hey, you saved my pension. I'm sorry, what's your name?
Yeah, what's
how
your
you
name?
Doing? What do you mean I say? How did I save your
Can
pension?
Can we put you in an ad, please?
Believe me, right? ABC would be like, I'd love to edit this. Would be right. The piece because it looks like extemporaneous. Instead, I got to talk about myself.
Yes.
And then can we play that first cut again that we played before? This is another moment where he's trying to go after Trump.
In a sense, I don't know why we're surprised by Trump. How many times does he have to prove we can't be trusted?
Okay.
Little gaffe. Yeah. I mean, it's Joe Biden can't campaign. It's like we saw this in 2020. The problem he has in 2020 versus 2024 is this. In 2020, I think his whole argument looks like, let's return to normal. COVID's going on. You've got Trump with his tweets. You guys don't like it. I'm going to be normal. But now the problem in 2024 is he has a record as president. Donald Trump has a record as president. And people don't like Joe Biden's record, right? He's got no one likes how he's handled immigration. No one's like how he's handled foreign policy, national security, the economy, inflation, all the big stuff, right? And that's the problem.
A couple other things. He wants Pennsylvania, but he shut off the gas leases. I don't know if you have it, Eric, but do you have Governor Shapiro from Sunday, if you get it? So Governor Shapiro is doing the best he can to be a surrogate as his Governor Pritzker, as his Governor Newsom, because President Biden cannot talk for himself. Terrible advocate for himself. And a lot of the stuff that he's done in infrastructure has not panned out. And he mocked the fact that he called it the Inflation Reduction Act as if to say, yeah, it's really a green energy package.
Yeah.
So you have, and it's a good question for Margaret Brennan to Governor Shapiro. It's like, what has it done for you that he has frozen all natural gas leases? And here's what he said.
Well, I think if the pause goes on for a long time, it has the potential to cost us jobs. That's why I want this to be as quick as possible. And what I went on to say, though, is we have an opportunity here in Pennsylvania to be the center of the clean energy economy. Thanks to President Biden, we have two regional hydrogen hubs.
Okay, that's fine. He's got some hubs. But if you want to win Pennsylvania, that's a problem.
It is. I mean, that's obviously it's a job killer, right? He knows that. That's why he
came out of nowhere. It's totally unnecessary.
Right. No, 100%. Again, this is like the capitulating to the far left on all of these things, right? You don't need these things. You don't pump. You don't need to pump trillions of dollars in the economy. You get high inflation. You shut down, gas pipelines, these type of projects. You lose jobs and like energy prices go up. It's very simple. Like we've known this for years. And that's going to be the tough thing here. And you saw the new polling today. I mean, Trump's up one in Pennsylvania. I think Dave McCormick's running a strong campaign there in the Senate race. I think Pennsylvania is absolutely in play. It's 100% in play for Donald Trump, just based on, you have this like remnant of, a past economy where it's thriving. And you've seen some of these policies that Biden put forward that has made it even worse in Pennsylvania.
I mean, if you're Trump, you have to get some of Philadelphia.
You do.
And Biden's lack of law, crime and punishment on crime could be the key. So you need a strategy there. But the one thing that came out is that he had 154,000 people voted for Nikki Haley in Pennsylvania.
I saw that.
So Nikki Haley has been campaigning for 4 months.
Right.
If you're working for Trump, what do you say to that?
Well, I think there's always going to be like a problem. You've seen this with Biden in Minnesota and Michigan here. Someone's on the ballot. I mean, getting 83% of the votes, good. I think it was like about 16, 17%. It shows, you're going to have to figure a way to bring all these people into the party.
Is there a way? November.
Absolutely. I think it is. I think it's a compare and contrast. It's a compare and contrast thing. It's a tone thing. I don't think Nikki Haley voters, when looking at everything that's happening at Columbia and Joe Biden letting it get out of control, everything happening at our southern border, everything happening in their pocketbook, everything happening internationally, a lot of Nikki Haley's voters, care about her foreign policy views, right? Those were deeply aligned with Donald Trump's foreign policy views, literally when she was in his administration on standing up to Russia, China, Iran, these bad actors. So I think you have more of a home with Donald Trump than Joe Biden if you're those voters.
But you've seen bitter campaigns before, and we watched Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio as bad as it got. Rubio, Ted Cruz gets a spot on the Republican convention and doesn't endorse Trump. It's nuts.
No, it's absolutely insane.
We never hear anything like this.
No, 100%.
We get used to it.
Yeah.
But with Nikki Haley, have you seen bigger rifts get healed?
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, 08, Obama and Clinton were like at each other's throat too. You've seen this like in 2000 with Bush and McCain. People end up eventually coming together. I think between now and then that'll happen. And again, you're talking about these voters, these block of voters. Are you going to go to Joe Biden? I don't think you are. Now, RFK, he's as far left as Joe Biden on a lot of these issues on green energy. You know, talking about like locking people up who like don't believe in climate change. He's an insane individual. So I don't think you have a home there. I think eventually he gets there. And I think back to one of your interesting points, I actually told this to the president's team yesterday. It's like, president should go to Colombia, Donald Trump. It's like, go to Colombia, go outside there. Why wouldn't you? It's an absolute win, right? It's right down the road. Philadelphia is easy to get to, too. You can get out of court at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday, be in Philadelphia at, what, 3:30? Hold a rally, be back here at 7. So there's things he can do, I think, to appeal to this community up here. Yeah, I mean, you could be in Ohio very quickly on a plane. So there's, you know, North Carolina, you could be on a plane like they tried the other day, obviously, with the weather being bad. But I do think President Trump should go to Colombia. Absolutely.
You know what's interesting is that a lot of the press shut him off. They didn't want to give him, and they shut off his speeches. They don't now.
Right.
Because they don't know if he's going to violate his gag order,
right,
in my view.
Right, exactly.
So now if he goes to Philadelphia, they go, we're following him. 100%. You better go. Yeah. Better carry everything. At any moment, he could drop the judge's daughter's name.
Correct.
And then we might be able to put him in jail for
it. Exactly. Exactly. So he's got a crowd for sure. He's got the good day to get to.
Elise Stefanik, has she been vetted, do you know, for number two slot?
I don't know. I think this is still – a lot of these conversations are so premature, right? We haven't had convention yet. I think it's going to be on President Trump and his team. If I'm him, I think the big thing he wants is someone who's loyal, right? You don't want a Mike Pence situation. He sees Mike Pence as disloyal. I think you want someone who actually can implement your agenda and who can defend you strong. I think he's got a lot of good candidates. I would obviously throw Elise in there. I think J.D. Vance would be great. I think Doug Burgum would be great. I think Marsha Blackburn would be great. There's a lot of great people you can consider.
Rubio?
I think Rubio would be awesome, too. He's got broad appeal. He's – you know, appeals to the Hispanic community. Everybody gives DeSantis that credit for the 20-point victory in Florida. Rubio also won by 20 points.
He did.
That Senate race. People
and that was not easy. That was a good.
Yeah, people forget about that. Like, he's very.
Val Demings was pretty formidable.
You know, Rick Scott wins those races by 1 or 2 points. Rubio's been winning his race by 3, 4, 5 points for years.
Garrett Ventry looking for another client. Thank you very much, Garrett.
Thanks,
great
Brian.
To see you,
with you.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea has angrily denied a false claim by President Biden that his uncle was eaten by cannibals during World War II.
We flew those single-engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones. We got shot down in New Guinea, and they never found the body because there used to be a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea.
You're going to lose the election.
Yeah.
Look, would a cannibal even eat people out of a wreckage? I mean, that's like their version of eating roadkill.
Yeah, I know. You want to eat like pasture-raised, grass-fed humans. And
Biden apologized to the Papua New Guinea Prime Minister by inviting him to a dinner with Pete Buttigieg, who will be served over rice with a balsamic reduction. So,
I mean, it is pretty crazy. That was The Daily Show. On Monday, The Daily Show just made mocked. It goes on too long, or else I would have told you guys. I actually didn't watch it till last night. But Jon Stewart, sometimes he always is interesting, even if you don't agree with him. Always creative, sometimes deceptive. But he just talked about how crazy it is, the detail they're going to, interviewing sketch artists about what they saw in the courtroom. It's crazy. And he's like, what are you guys doing? You're doing exactly what you said you learned not to do, and that's overreport on Donald Trump. It's crazy. Just a quick note. Coming up this Saturday night, I hope to see everyone, especially K-Dawn listeners, at my show in beautiful Henderson, Nevada, right off the Strip in Las Vegas. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. It'll be history, liberty, and laughs.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. Brian Kilmeade Show. It's a consequential Wednesday. So much going on. Uptown, you have the riots. There's, I would say, demonstrations taking place at Columbia. And it looks like the deadline that I thought went up on midnight last night, and when nothing was done, I thought we'd be talking about the NYPD going there, cleaning out all the tents. Instead, the president says they got a deal to continue talking for 48 more hours. That's nuts. It shows weakness. What do these students want? Alleged students, air quotes. These students want a divestiture out of Israel. They don't want to let Israel invest in Colombia. And they want the Palestinians in control of Israel. So, I don't know, can the Colombia president do all that? Let's just think about that for a second. What are you negotiating? You're the president. They are students. You have finals to take. People, they're very big finals for a lot of people. That could mean graduation or not graduation. And there's anti-Semitic behavior taking place on the campus. And you're still dealing with the students instead of dealing with the security for the Jewish students on campus who have a legitimate reason to feel threatened. And if you, by the way, think that this is an overstatement, well, that these students are overreacting, you have barred your outspoken Jewish professor from getting on campus because you can't guarantee his safety. And you'll hear from him shortly. This hour, we're going to be joined by Jackie Heinrich with all the breaking news out of Washington. The President of the United States is speaking right now because the $95 billion foreign aid package has been signed. It got his to his desk, passed the Senate yesterday. Some of you aren't happy. I'm happy with the Ukraine aid. I'm happy with the Taiwan aid. I'm happy with the Israel aid, the Indochina aid. I'm not thrilled with the Gaza aid. It's almost equal to what Israel's getting and the NGOs that are getting it. Are we sure they've been vetted? A lot of these NGOs are filled with Hamas members. Remember that. Sadly linked up with the United Nations. And I want to ban a TikTok, which is now in there, but it takes too long. It's going to go right past this election. With me right now is Julian Epstein, served as chief counsel to the House Judiciary Committee and staff director to the House Oversight Committee for Democrats. And I have to tell you, the reason why I'm not reporting about the Donald Trump trial downtown is because they're an off day today. I think Donald Trump is golfing at his Westchester club. Julian Epstein, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it.
All right. First off, Julian, just something a little out of your ballpark, perhaps. $95 billion aid, you support it?
Yeah, I second everything you just said. I think the Ukrainian aid is important. I think the aid for Israel is important. I think the aid in the Indo-Pacific is critical. I think we have seen enough examples of UN, whether it's UNRWA or some of the other agencies, being used in ways that are supportive of terrorist groups there. And I don't think there's been enough investigation, enough vetting. The fact that you had a number of UNRWA employees who were openly supporting Hamas after the October 7th massacre tells me that there are just huge, huge cultural issues that have not been properly investigated and that need investigation before we start sending aid.
But I'll give you, I think it's actually worse,
Julian. I agree with everything you said.
Some of them participated with Hamas in the massacre. And even though that doesn't count for the 1,100 in the organization, it does count for a few dozen, and we don't know how deep it gets. I want you to hear what's going on in Colombia. Right now, the sit-in continues. They say they're not leaving for those things I said up top about divestiture and everything like that. Here's a little of how it sounded. Cut one.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Disclose. Divest.
We will not stop. We will not rest. Disclose. Divest. We will not stop.
All right, so let's disclose. There are about 100 U.S. colleges that have reported gifts or contracts with Israel totaling $375 million minimum. The data tells little about where the money is going. MIT in particular, $11 million from the defense ministry over the past decade. They also get something in return, like great research with great students. When you hear that, Julian, what are you thinking? Can you believe this is happening in America? And can you believe it's happening in dozens of campuses, not just in Columbia, not just at NYU?
No, I can't believe this on just so many levels. And, you know, if these protests were going on in the state of Florida, Ron DeSantis would shut this down in a heartbeat. And the fact that this is happening in Democratic areas like California and New York, and the governor doesn't shut it down, the mayor doesn't shut it down, and the president of the United States, who has authority under the civil rights laws, the federal civil rights laws, Title VI, sort of a number of different laws, the fact that the federal government hasn't done anything as they did, as Dwight Eisenhower did when black students were attempted to be blocked from entering public schools in the South in the late 50s. The fact that no one is doing anything about this is just outrageous. And what it will do is it will encourage more of it. This is not speech. This is illegal harassment, and it's violence. It's shutting down the education system. This is not a liberation movement that the Students for Justice in Palestine are supporting. The Palestinians have rejected a two-state solution on at least five different occasions. The Palestinian leadership through Hamas and through the Palestinian Authority pledges the genocide of Jews and others that are different in any way from them, either religious minorities or ethnic minorities. The civilian casualty ratio in Gaza right now is lower than the civilian casualty ratio was with almost any other conflict that the U.S. has prosecuted, yep. Particularly in urban areas, whether it's Mosul, whether it's Afghanistan, Japan. Several million Japanese were killed after 2,000 soldiers were U.S. soldiers were killed in Pearl Harbor. In Sudan, there's been 2 million Arabs and Muslims that have been killed. In Syria, there were close to 1 million, about 600,000-700,000. We were responsible maybe for 500,000 in Afghanistan and Iraq, but there were never any protests then. It's only when Jews are attacked by genocidal maniacs, are they told that they do not have the right to defend themselves? Are they told that they do not have the right to go after what is effectively a Nazi fascist organization that preaches genocide of anyone that's different from them? And the fact that the Biden administration and the left just tolerates this is only encouraging them. They have more than enough authority to shut them down, to tell them if they want to protest, there's a corner and or there is a designated area on the university campus they can do it on. But to allow them to do this kind of thing is just encouraging
them. Make
them
be heroes. I 100% agree. I just want to get you, before we run out of time, on the Trump trial. So we're about 2 days into the testimony. David Pecker out there talking about, and they're trying to say a conspiracy to commit election interference. And they're saying Michael Cohen, Donald Trump, and David Pecker combined to do that. They talk about negative things written about that were made up on Marco Rubio, on Ted Cruz, on Ben Carson. And they also talk about killing some negative stories in the president's background. Some not true, some may be true. The definitely one with the doorman and a love child, not true, but they didn't want anything coming out, so they just paid it off. Your reaction to what we've learned so far?
This is an outrageous case. It's an embarrassment to the legal system that this case is being brought. The notion, the theory that we heard on Monday from the prosecution that this is about election interference because the Trump campaign was trying to suppress bad stories. Suppressing bad stories is not election interference. Everyone does it. Non-disclosure agreements are perfectly legal. If suppressing bad news were election interference, then what would one say about the Biden campaign in 2020 that actively used all of its resources to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop case? That is had much more serious implications in terms of the election than the alleged affair with Donald Trump in 2016. Everything falls apart, Brian. I mean, the idea that this was election interference. The conduct, the election occurred in November of 2016. The conduct in question here, namely the record keeping and the failure to disclose this, if there was any obligation as a campaign contribution, all occurred in 2017. So
after he was elected,
this is after he's elected. So this is a phony, terrible theory that should be an embarrassment to anybody that's making it. I just can't believe that the prosecution made this with a straight face. But what they're also trying to do, Brian, is they are trying to bootstrap a federal crime, namely the non-reporting of hush money as a federal campaign expenditure. They're trying to bootstrap that to a state misdemeanor. Well, as a number of FEC chairs have said, and officials have said, officials have said in the past, hush money is not a campaign expenditure that requires reporting. And if the officials in charge of enforcing the law at the Federal Election Commission say that hush money is not a reportable expenditure, then how could anyone say that Donald Trump had the intent, which is the requirement under the law, to violate the law? It just doesn't make any sense. So this is, there is no precedent for this kind of legal theory. There's none. You can't find. I challenge anyone to find a precedent. There is none. Civil libertarians on the left have been calling for decades for the equal application of the law. They're completely silent on this. They should be ashamed of themselves. This case would never be brought. This legal theory is complete bunk. This case would never be brought if it was anyone other than Donald Trump. And this is John. This is Joseph Stalin. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. You know, remember, just for your viewers' benefit, I'm not somebody who voted for Donald Trump. I voted for Joe Biden, and I find this case outrageous. I also find it outrageous because this conduct now occurred 8 years ago. They have waited 8 years on the eve of the election to bring a phony, legally defective case against the former president on the eve of the election. I mean, it's just amazing to me that the left is doing this with a straight voice, straight face. And I say to them, and this is, I'll conclude on this thought, I say to them that if Donald Trump is elected, watch out, because I can think of a lot more credible theories where a Trump Justice Department could bring a criminal prosecution on Joseph Biden for the documents case, a case in which he held classified documents in his garage for years, or on Hunter Biden for either the foreign agent registration violations or for tax violations, and they could find creative ways of tolling the statutes of limitations. And if the left doesn't think – if the left thinks that the law can be stretched in this way that they're using against Donald Trump for their political opponents, then watch out, because there are easier theories, less pretzel-like theories that the political right and the Republicans can use against the Bidens and against a whole lot of others. And this is where the system begins to completely break down. And right. this is the fault of the lawfare left.
I know. I would hate to see that. I would hate to see Trump win and then go after him because it hurts the country. But I understand the sentiment. I just saw this guest essay in The New York Times today, Julian Epstein, and I thought the title said it all. I thought the Bragg case against Trump was a legal embarrassment. Now I think it's a historic mistake. This is from Jed Handelsman Sugarman. He is a law professor at Boston University. And when he came out and said the case was a joke, everyone jumped on him. So he took a step back, watched it for the last 6 days, and then wrote this column in The New York Times. So I think he echoes what you thought. You know, you're not going to vote for Trump. It's not the point. It's not the point. You're leaving him in this case to go over things in his background that make people distracted to think what is a crime and what is a bad decision personally. And what is practical? And what the thing that I bring up all the time, let's say you and I are in business. I go to run for office. You don't like the way our business ended. You didn't like the way I acted in business. I don't like the way you acted. So you start giving interviews to people saying, yeah, don't vote for Brian Kilmeade. He really screwed me in business. He didn't work hard. Didn't show up on time. I go, Julian, can't have you talking like this. What is it going to take for you to calm down? And you give me a price and I pay it. Did I commit a crime?
Right. No, you didn't, and it's well recognized in the law, I think, that that kind of thing is not a campaign expenditure, which needs to be reported on the federal reporting requirements, which is the theory, essentially, that Bragg is using here. And, you know, he and I both wrote the author you cited and I both wrote a pieces for – he wrote for the New York Times. I wrote for the Wall Street Journal a year ago in April.
I know,
saying that this case was bunk, and we were both attacked for it. And I think everything we said then is becoming true now. The other point that we haven't touched on, Brian, is both Alvin Bragg and Letitia James campaigned on going after Donald Trump. And I think the Letitia James case was also a travesty because in that alleged fraud case, there were no victims and there were no damages and nobody was complaining. And the fact that they're going to try to hold Trump up on a half a billion dollar fine, criminal fine on that, is just it's completely unprecedented. Again, it wouldn't be happening to anybody other than Donald Trump. And again, I don't say I'm not a Donald Trump supporter. So I say this as somebody who's just outraged by the abuse of the law. The fact that you have prosecutors out there campaigning on going after political figures like Trump is a complete conflict of interest, and is something that it's inexplicable to me as to why the New York bar doesn't take up. I mean, this kind of conflict of interest in any other context would be something that would be worthy of disciplinary proceedings. But the fact that the New York bar turns a blind eye to the conflicts, I think, that were just were manifest with both Letitia James and Alvin Bragg is very, very troubling to me as well. So there is a lot wrong with this stuff. And the fact that the left is out there because it's good for cable ratings, it's good for selling copy, it's good for keeping people on TV, the sort of the lawfare left industry benefits from it. The fact that they're so opportunistically and self-promotingly
got to end it there.
Going along with this thing is outrageous.
Julian Epstein, thanks so much. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Jackie Heinrich is with us, not in Washington. She's actually with us in studio, fresh off helping out Dana Perino and her great show. Jackie, real quick, the president just spoke, but I was on the air. Can you give me an idea what he said?
So basically, he said he signed the $95 billion foreign aid package into law. He said that it took longer than it should have. It was sort of a jab at Republicans for the infighting over the aid bill and the stalled Senate version. And he's re-upped his ironclad commitment to Israel's security. He talked about how the news of this aid was being received in Ukraine, said that there was celebration in the trenches. And he said that he regrets that it doesn't include border security and, interestingly enough, promised to do something on it. So we'll be watching to see if he actually follows
through. But he didn't bring up TikTok.
No.
And he didn't bring up the campus riots.
Didn't take any questions. He was on his way to another event. He said that he intends to answer questions after that. There's been a lot of pressure on him to acknowledge what's happening on these campuses. You have Jewish students being told they can't go to school because it's not safe for them. And he's been in front of cameras so many times and hasn't seized that microphone.
Is that acceptable? Surprising.
Shocking, I think. And there's a lot of building pressure. And if you read Politico Playbook today, they say the reason why he hasn't talked about this is that it doesn't matter to the campaign. That ultimately, and that's just really stunning to me.
Back in a moment.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi, everyone. The show here. As you may have heard, Congress passed a bill that the president signed into law that is designed to ban TikTok in the United States. That will take TikTok away from you and 170 million Americans who find community and connection on our platform. Make no mistake, this is a ban. It's actually ironic because the freedom of expression on TikTok reflects the same American values that make the United States a beacon of freedom. Rest assured, we aren't going anywhere. We are confident, and we will keep fighting for your rights in the courts.
And that is the CEO of TikTok talking about the fact that in this bill, they'll have to divest within a few months, way too long, or they're going to be banned in the U.S. Jackie Heinrich is here. Normally she's in Washington, but she filled in for Bill Hemmer today. So Jackie, the bill that was just signed, the president just spoke about, has a TikTok ban in it. But TikTok's got some moves to do, to play, including suing, right?
Right.
A lawsuit to say you can't do that.
Well, we saw this happen with the Trump administration. They tried to ban TikTok and or force a divestiture. And there is the potential for litigation here that would stall it. I think the fact that it's going to be signed into law will, you know, sort of solidify the ultimate effort to get this done. But you know, this has been done before. Remember, they did it with Grindr. So it's not like this is the first time. So all this, you know,
they made them divest because they were using some of those pictures to extort people.
Right. Right. And, you know, you don't want to have a national security concern used by millions of Americans. I mean, they're the fact we've talked about this so much, but China basically controls the app because the owner, the Chinese owner, is beholden to the CCP. So you've heard our national security community, including Director Wray yesterday, saying that this is poses a risk for mass surveillance and for manipulation of people. And so that's the sort of underlying push to get this done. Mike Johnson was pretty smart to put this into the foreign aid bill that got sent over to the Senate, because they did pass by an overwhelming margin a standalone bill to make this happen through the House. And it was hanging out in limbo in the Senate because it's a tough issue. You've got a lot of Democrats who run these committees who thought that it was going to be, you know, hairy with their base, young voters especially, because you've heard a lot of this pushback.
Republicans, too. Yeah. I mean, Matt Rand Paul was somebody who's totally against it. I think some others. This guy, Scott Galloway, was kind of interesting, NYU professor. Here's what he said. Cut 25.
What might sound paranoid doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, through the frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel. I think that we are being manipulated. I think Americans are easier to fool than convinced they've been fooled. But if I were the CCP, I'd be doing exactly the same thing. I think social media is sowing division and polarization.
But that app in particular, and as people use the analogy, you know, CBS, if the Chinese company said, I'd like to buy CBS or Fox, they wouldn't be allowed.
Right.
So we have to ban other apps from other countries. If Iran comes up with a great app, do you think that they should be able to take root in America? Have we learned our lesson?
Well, that was the whole, you know, sort of defense coming out of people who were supporting this bill, was that it's not about any one country. It's about the risk to national security. We would have taken the same action. But speaking of China, you know, there's a reason why you don't see any videos about the Uyghurs. You know, they deny that this is a problem there. And, you know, TikTok tries to say, you know, oh, we're totally separate from the Chinese government. But then you see these, you know, very clear shapings that happen with the content there. And that's a concern.
It's a concern. And for the CIA, for the FBI director, too. I know he's not a favorite of Republicans, but this is a apolitical issue. Cut 24.
TikTok, for us, represents a national security concern. And the reason I say that is that TikTok's parent company is beholden to the Chinese government. So that, for us, manifests itself in three specific ways. It has to do with the data. It has to do with the recommendation algorithm. It has to deal with the software.
So you get it. That's where he's coming from. To me, it's a no-brainer. How strong is the TikTok lobby?
Very strong. I mean, there was some reporting in, I believe it was the Daily Caller. You had that organization literally hiring out staffers from key Senate offices as part of their lobbying effort, like pulling them from their jobs on the Hill to come join the TikTok lobby because they had deep, longstanding connections to some of the most, you know, important or relevant members who would be controlling the committees that this bill comes up in. I mean, this was a very, very strong and coordinated effort by TikTok. And then remember, you also saw when it went through the House, the day that they were voting, if you were in a zip code as a TikTok, like you're using the app in the zip code of a lawmaker who is on the fence, you got a pop-up on your screen saying, call your member of Congress right now and tell them to vote against this bill. You're going to lose your access to this app. And you heard, you know, you got thousands of calls going to lawmakers.
Children.
From kids.
Yeah,
you can hear school bells in the background. I mean, this was not an unsophisticated effort.
So the President of the United States speaks on Earth Day. And on Earth Day, casually just mentions about the anti-Semitism. Then he goes up and says, we had basically the Palestinians, you should understand their cause too. So it's really, there's two sides to this. And then he goes and sits with AOC. I've learned a long time to listen to her. At which time she claims yesterday, let's listen to her. She says that the IDF is killing Palestinians. Their bodies are being dug up with their hands being zip tied. So what she knows directly is I'm not sure. But how could the president on one hand praise her after all these years as a politician know there's a downside to praising a member of the squad?
Well, I want to also point out, and this might be too in the weeds but I'll try to explain it really simply. When the president answered that question where he seemed to equivocate, you know,
yes,
Israel and what's happening with Palestinians, or the anti-Israel protests, rather, and what's happening with Palestinians, that was a shouted question from the transmission pool. So Fox was basically running the broadcast of that event. And Biden had already scooted past the traveling press that follows him. He didn't take questions from them. A Fox producer shouted that question to him separate from the regular pool. So Biden has been in front of cameras multiple times. He has not seized any of those opportunities to denounce what's happening on these campuses. And there's a really interesting Politico report today. The headline says, Biden camp not sweating political fallout from latest round of campus protests. It goes on to say, so far, campaign aides say they don't see it ballooning into more of a problem for the reelection bid. Astounding.
Astounding. There's also a thing called leadership, anti-Semitism, highest since 1938 in our country, taking root in the most esteemed campuses. As president, I'd want to address it. You'd have to hold me back with chains to not do that.
You had Jewish students being told that they wouldn't be safe at school and that they should consider taking their classes virtually. Right. I mean, when do you address that?
I want you to hear this Jewish professor at Columbia that just spoke on your show, Shai Davidi?
Davidi.
Davidi. So here's a little from that professor.
The University of Columbia has two presidents right now, and it's Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, because this is not about Israel. This is about America. And the university just decided that they don't care about Jewish safety. They don't care about the Jewish students. They are negotiating with suspended organizations that they want to burn everything down. And I'm despondent this morning.
So, and he was the one whose key card didn't work?
Yeah.
Did you get confirmation on that?
Yeah. So he's a professor at the business school, and he went to go onto the main campus the other day. And after he had held a pro-Israel demonstration, counter-demonstration, they shut off his key card. He said that he hasn't tried it again because he doesn't feel safe there. I mean, you see the display, and the school hasn't broken this down. You had the Columbia professor or university president overnight. 3 a.m, basically extend the deadline to dismantle and get out. And the point he made on the show was that Columbia is negotiating with Hamas. So that was his sort of framing of it, because you have these protesters who are saying we are Hamas, and they're negotiating a deadline extension to dismantle this, as the Jewish students at that school are being told, hey, maybe you shouldn't come here. So they're not showing up for the Jewish students, and they're negotiating with people who are spewing, echoing terrorist rhetoric. And he finds that to be very, you know, offensive. And the president hasn't addressed it.
Would you say the White House is pretty confident they're in a good place right now in April of 2024 for November?
Definitely. You know, we have reported that the Biden campaign thinks the issue of abortion is the winner for them. They've looked at the data, and in all the swing states, you have pockets of voters who didn't come to the polls in 2020, but they were mobilized to vote against Republicans because of the abortion issue in the midterms, the state and local elections, and the special elections. And so they feel comfortable that with those numbers, their campaign is pretty much locked up. That's why, instead of courting the middle, they're trying to energize the base. And I think that's why he's so reticent to speak out against these campus protests, because you do need the youth vote. He did that whole Earth Day thing. I mean, he tweeted 25 times since these protests, as of yesterday, spiraled out of control, 9 times about climate. They're very concerned about the youth vote. They see that as a key part of the base that they need to energize, but I think that they might also risk losing the middle, because there are people who are watching all of this play out and watching him also sort of pull back his vocal support for Israel and have a problem with that.
See, it must be frustrating for you and Peter and everybody, the whole press pool. I don't care if you're CBS or NBC, to travel all these distances, go every single day, and very erratically he ever speaks to you.
Yeah.
And it's not like other people are getting the interviews and it's just Fox that's frustrated. Nobody's getting the interviews. And they basically said no sit downs up until the election day. That's not doing your job. Do the people matter? Forget reporters. You're the mouthpiece for the people. And it's just saying, I don't care what anybody wants. I'm going to just stay on message.
Well, if you look at where he does occasionally do interviews, it's with very friendly influencers or radio show hosts, or what the White House or campaign calls constituency media, you know, outlets that speak to certain demographics and have an audience of a certain demographic, Hispanics, Blacks. These are the voters that Biden's trying to get his message out to. I think the White House would be happier if the press corps didn't exist, because then they could just go to whoever right. is the friendliest and have a targeted message get out that they can tailor and engineer. But yeah, it's frustrating. You want to hear him give you more than 3 seconds as he with a chopper in the background as he heads to Marine One.
All right. I want you to hear some of the reasons why maybe President Biden is not speaking to the press and doesn't really people get nervous when he speaks. These are some of the things that he said that at the very least need to be challenged. Cut 31.
My uncle, both Ambrose J. Finnegan, he flew those single engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones. He got shot down in New Guinea. And they never found the body because there used to be there were a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea. I, like an awful lot of people in this audience, was the first in my family to go to college and watch my dad struggle to help me get there and get all the kids there. I remember one of the conductors when I was going home, and Ange came up to me as I walked in. He said, "Joey," and he grabbed my cheek. He said, "Joey, baby." And he said, "All this time," because I just published in the newspaper that I had traveled 1,200,000 miles on Air Force planes. You know how?
So these are some of the things that are just not true that have been fact-checked. And it'd be different if it was one story that was fact. He keeps saying it. And he did it again with the 18-wheeler comment yesterday. So he got a great moment when someone tried to give him a compliment. Cut 30.
I tell you what. And by the way, is that right?
The only reason I have a pension is because of you.
Well, we did get that done. Anyway, besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler.
Never drove an 18-wheeler. He's been politically fact-checked. He drove in one once as a passenger. So instead of taking that moment, tell me how I did that. Tell me the program that helped you. You're a Teamster. I'm so glad to do that. That's why I became president. He goes into the 18-wheeler. So now if he was able to talk to the press after, you'd go, Mr. President, you were never a truck driver.
I think how I see this is it's part of his effort to relate to whoever he's speaking to. That's why he, you know, was raised by Puerto Ricans and also
he went to a black church. He was raised in a black church.
And the Jewish community. I mean, he has a way, he likes to find a way to connect to all of these groups when he's talking to them. And so I guess the 18-wheeler. But, you know, on the Uncle Bozy stuff, I just didn't have cannibals on my bingo card for 2024. I really didn't. So, and the White House will not acknowledge that that was a problem, even though you had New Guinea's prime minister
they're upset.
Saying, they're like, hello, we shouldn't be known for cannibalism. It caused an international stir.
Because evidently that is a key, Papua New Guinea is a key strategic island off China that China is trying to influence, that we recognized we don't want to have, we're losing the Solomon Islands, evidently, mm-hmm. kicked out of Niger, mm-hmm. huge story that nobody's talking about, and now given away to the Russians. So we're going to take a time out, a couple more minutes with Jackie, because Jackie's had a part-time volunteer job that's taken a lot of her time. Find out what it is in just a moment.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
We're back with a few more moments with Jackie Heinrich, Fox News White House correspondent, as you know, but here in studio, and she's so loyal to the show she came in. Jackie, I did not know you were part of the White House Correspondents Board. You're going to be on the dais this Saturday.
Yep. We'll be with the president on the stage. So, unfortunately, I just have to eat my dinner in front of 2,000 people. So,
can't hang out with your friends.
Do me a favor, if you're watching C-SPAN and see something in my teeth, just like shoot me an email or
something. Do you have to talk?
No, I'm not talking, but I did produce. This is actually great. We're honoring our White House longtime photographer for Fox, Ed Lewis, with a Lifetime Achievement Award. So I put together an interview with him talking about, you know, winning that award, and we'll see him on the stage. And I helped put together a lot of the program, and also I'm on the scholarship committee. So our other function, in addition to advocating for access to the president, is we do scholarships. And so we've got our scholarship luncheon with all the students tomorrow, and leading that too.
Colin Jost will be the comedian.
Yeah,
kind of built for it, right? It's kind of the thing he does, delivers kind of the news. What do you think it's going to be like? Some people have made that made a big mistake there. And attack people like Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean,
you have no idea what he's going to say.
I have no idea. We don't get a heads up at all. And Kelly O'Donnell, who's the president of the WHCA this year, she works for NBC. They pick the entertainer. I think that it's, you know, one of the times where you can see sort of fun poked at both sides. But we've seen that veer into bad territory before, and including from the president, who's going to be giving remarks. So we'll see what he says. I'm more nervous about what Biden's going to say than Colin Jost, to be honest with you.
Right. Do you think they're nervous because they're going to make him try to be funny? Right.
They have to be. I mean, we were talking earlier. He doesn't do interviews for this exact reason. Now he's going to be delivering remarks to a room full of, you know, news people. So it's kind of his like worst audience to be talking to.
Right. The other thing is, remember when George Bush, you might not remember this, but said gave way to Laura Bush?
Yeah.
Maybe it's something like that where he starts and there's some type of skit and Jill gives the speech.
Right.
But that might fuel even more. But in the big picture, was this a lot of time?
So much time. It's really the craziest unpaid volunteer job I ever decided to take on. I oftentimes tell myself that when my term is up in, you know, at the end of the 3 years, to remember this moment so I don't run again. But it's very rewarding. You know, we advocate for access to the president. It's the best beat. It's a very important beat. And
a lot of context.
Yeah.
All right. Jackie, thanks so much. Great to see you. Jackie Heinrich in studio. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.